everybody. Please allow myself to introduce myself. I'm your host, Captain Marvelous, and welcome to Gotham Goes Hollywood. This is a special bonus episode to kick off what will be Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Month here on I'm Batman the Podcast. I have loved Batman since I was a kid, and I have loved the Ninja Turtles just as equally. For the month of June, I will be reviewing several of the live-action movies of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. I will review the classic flicks from the 90s, and as well as the Michael Bay-produced movies from 2014 and 2016, and doing comparisons from both films from the past and from the current ones. Today, though, is a special bonus episode, as I will review a documentary, which is something rare for me, as I don't believe I have ever reviewed a documentary on any podcast I've done throughout the years. This movie is going to give you a look into the creation of the Turtles and how they came to be a pop culture phenomenon. So without further ado, let's dance the dance they dance in France. Let's get to it. Today's movie is titled Turtle Power, the definitive history of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, released on DVD August 12, 2014 to coincide with the release of the Michael Bay produced live action film. We start off by hearing a story about two men who would tell each other a joke about a turtle kicking the bus that they would ride home in, and spinning the bus all around making it go the other way. The men would get such a laugh from this, and we learn that this is where the seed was planted for the Ninja Turtles. Different people talk about how this idea should not have been as big as it is today.
We had no idea how big could be.
I felt obligated to resist making it a total commercial.
Every morning, 7 o'clock on the dot, I watched every single episode.
They're kind of like the cartoon Beatles.
So it's a story that really tells you that anybody can be successful.
Should it have happened? I mean, the odds are infinitesimally low, but it did.
We start our story in 1980. Peter Laird, the co-creator of the Ninja Turtles, started a self-made comic book magazine called Scat. Him, several artists from the Northampton area, worked together to create original stories. Kevin Eastman, the other creator of the Turtles, was riding the bus to his job at a pizza parlor when he found a copy of Scat on the bus. He decided to go meet Laird and try to get his stories published in the magazine. When Eastman went over to Laird's place to meet... When Eastman went over to meet Laird, Eastman saw a original pencil drawing of Jack Kirby artwork that Laird had purchased, and they both hit it off, becoming best friends. Eastman and Laird created Mirage Studios, which was named because they worked from their living room in their home and thought the whole studio aspect of it was just a mirage. November 1983. One night, as the two men watched TV, Eastman drew a turtle standing up with a mask and holding nunchucks. He showed it to Laird, who then tried to one-up Eastman by drawing him another turtle, but this time with two sticks instead of nunchucks. Eastman then tried to one-up him by drawing four turtles, each one holding different weapons, a katana, nunchucks, bo staff, and scythe. He wrote Ninja Turtles above it, and Laird decided to add Teenage Mutant to the title as a joke, and because he felt it had a certain rhythm to it. They then felt they had to come up with a story of how these turtles became ninjas. Both men felt they worked great together because the other filled in something that the other person lacked. Eastman was the person who brought the dynamic and excitement, and Laird was the person who brought the details and nuances that would make each story more deep. After 3 months of working on the comic, the men borrowed money where they could, and used all the money they had, and published 3,000 copies of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Issue 1. May 1984, the first issue of TMNT is published. The first issue was a black and white comic, which was a parody of the violent comics that were popular at the time, most notably the work that Frank Miller was doing on Daredevil. The Daredevil comics had the Evil Hand organization, so the Turtles had the Foot. Daredevil's teacher was named Stick, so the Turtles' teacher was named Splinter. The creators think of it more as a loving homage than a parody. Shredder is the main villain for the Ninja Turtles. He has become known as their main adversary and is basically the Joker to the Turtles' Batman. Shredder was killed in the first issue of the comic. And Peter Laird explains that this was because they never expected to make a second issue. All 3,000 issues were sold, and so the pair decided to create a second issue of the book. Issue number 2 was released in October 1984. And remember how 3,000 issues were printed of the first issue of this? Well, this time, they had 15,000 issues pre-ordered. So that means that these 15,000 were already sold. By the time issue 3 and 4 were released, the Ninja Turtles comic was something which was something created by two men in their home, was selling more comic books than the Avengers. Eastman talks about how Raphael was based on him with a fiery short temper, and Donatello was based on Peter Laird being the quiet intellectual type. He mentions that April O'Neil was based on his then girlfriend, now wife. They wanted to create a character that would be crazier than Raphael, and so they came up with Casey Jones, a street vigilante who used sporting equipment as weapons. We see an early sketch of Casey and some of the names they were thinking of using. So we see the first name on the list, and guess what? It's Batman. So the first name they were thinking of giving Casey Jones was Bat-Man. It's like, you know, because he was like Bat. He used bats. So other names were Bad Boy, Lefty, Slugger, Babe, The Kid, Pinch, and DH. Eastman mentions that Kurt Russell in the movie Big Trouble in Little China was the inspiration for the character's look and personality. Mirage Studios started to grow, and now they actually rented an office to run the studio from. Eastman mentions one of the people who worked with them named Steve Levine. He says that Steve was the inspiration for Michelangelo since he was a funny guy, and they've been friends since high school. He even mentions how Steve was the Robin Williams of his school. Well, somebody better check to see where Steve is hanging around lately, if that's the case. Now, I know it sounds kind of weird, but it seems like I'm skipping around, but that's kind of what the movie does. It's a documentary, but they don't really separate it into chapters. They kind of just talk about everything. They do keep it to a timeline, but they do jump around as we went from how characters like Casey Jones was created to the offices and how many issues were sold. So it's a little odd, but I think it's still worth a look if you find this movie. It's not even that expensive. I believe I got this movie at like Best Buy or Walmart for like $5. So if you find it somewhere, it's totally worth it. Going back to the movie, we also meet Ryan Brown, who became the inker for the book, Michael Dooney, I believe, and Jim Lawson, who was also an artist, and this became the core crew for the Ninja Turtles comic book. At issue number 8, the studio was printing 135,000 copies of the comic, and not just printing them, but selling them all. Mark Friedman, a licensing agent and founder of Surge Licensing, visited Eastman and Laird to talk about expanding the characters into toys. Peter and Eastman weren't interested in expanding the characters, believe it or not. They had a good thing going and they didn't really want to ruin it. They did make a deal with Friedman, though. They gave him 30 days to try and find a good deal for them. So they gave him a copy of the first issue and a rubber foam turtle toy that they had made. Friedman presented the idea to various companies and was rejected or just laughed out of the building. even having had Disney reject the idea for the Turtles franchise. So you can you imagine Disney had a chance to own the Ninja Turtles from the beginning? That's weird. Friedman met with a man named Richard Salis, the marketing director at Playmate Toys. Playmate Toys made figures for various toy companies, including Mattel, but they did not have any toys made under their own name, and they wanted to get into this business. So they were making toys for other companies. I believe they made like G.I. Joe and He-Man action figures and such, like actually creating the figures, but they didn't have their own line. Friedman gave them, he gave Playmates copies of the Turtles comic books, and Playmates fell in love with it. They decided to go with it. Now, the company knew that the comics were selling extremely well, but were not yet something that were in the popular stream. They wanted to tell the backstory of these Turtles through animation, and that way they could get it out to more kids, because, hey, it worked for He-Man, right? The comics were taken to Fred Wolf, head of Wolf Animations. David Wise was brought on to write the script, and David Wise was already a fan of the comics, so it was something that he had a lot of enthusiasm to do. December 1986, the contract was signed, and Ninja Turtles was officially going to be produced as a toy line and a TV show.
Kevin Collins says, "Get over here. We got big news." So Jim and I hopped in the car and went over. And they said that Playmates had accepted the Turtles and they were going to do it. And it was just great. It was just amazing.
Mine goes, "This is my dream come true."
It was a surreal moment, you know, to think, you know, less than 3 years after that we scraped together the money to publish this first issue of the Turtle comic, we were going to have a TV show and a toy line.
"Ladies and gentlemen, this is it. This is for the Teenage
Mutant
Ninja Turtles.
This is on, right, guys?
Wait a minute. Is it on?
So Playmates got around to designing a lot of the figures they wanted. And during the meetings for the toys, Laird and Eastman weren't happy with Playmates. They thought many of their designs were of many of their designs were things like, "Oh, it's a crazy pizza chef, and look, this guy's a fireman, and this guy's a cop, but he's crazy." And Laird described it as venturing into the silly, stupid realm. Playmates had made the toys way too big and overcomplicated. Like, seriously, they were huge, and they wanted to add all these, like, mechanisms so the toys could move and all that. But they realized they had to pull it back in. One of the problems with the original character design of the Turtles is that, other than what weapon they carried, you couldn't tell them apart. They all looked the same, and they all wore red bandanas, so if they wanted to sell multiple figures, they couldn't just all look identical. Playmates fixed this problem by giving the Turtles what is probably their most iconic feature, and that is the different colored bandanas. So one of the main things of the Ninja Turtles was not made by their creators, but was actually brought by the company that made their toys. Each turtle had a different colored bandana and was given different shades of green for their skin color, along with a belt buckle with their initial on it so that you could tell them apart. Leonardo, my favorite, there's no doubt that he's the best one, was given the blue bandana with a kind of a dark, dull green to his skin. Raphael was brighter green with a red bandana. Michelangelo was darker green with an orange bandana. And Donatello was actually brown-skinned with a purple bandana. The cartoon, on the other hand, was going to differentiate the turtles via their personalities, not so much their looks. Leonardo would be more serious, because he's the leader, because he's the best. Donatello would be the inventor, you know, because he does machines, whatever that means. Raphael was the strong, sarcastic guy, and Michelangelo would be the goofier, funny turtle. In December 1987, the first episode of the Ninja Turtles cartoon was aired, and the toy line was launched. Both were a huge success, with Toys R Us stores selling out of the figures. Now, keep in mind, this was actually a limited run of cartoons, and only 5 episodes were made and shown. Fred Wolf was excited about making more episodes, but there were none in order, so believe it or not, the Ninja Turtles cartoon could have ended just after 5 episodes, especially if the toys weren't such a hit. Fred Wolf had to make a deal with Friedman, who was in charge of the marketing rights at this point. A deal was struck, and 26 more episodes were ordered for production. I like this story here. During one of the first episodes, we see a scene where Michelangelo is surfing, and he says, "Cowabunga!" Writer David Weiss explains that he got this idea from a Snoopy cartoon. He says there's a cartoon where Snoopy is surfing, and Snoopy says "Cowabunga," so he decided to add that in as a tribute. Fred Wolf liked this so much, he decided to just have Michelangelo keep repeating it every episode until it became a catchphrase. So now "Cowabunga" is like the thing the turtles are known for. Bebop and Rocksteady were also introduced into the cartoon by Playmate. So this wasn't a creation by Eastman and Laird either. And their designs were actually from toys that Playmates had designed earlier. These were actually 2 of the designs that Eastman and Laird actually liked. So they brought these into the cartoons. One, of course, being like a soldier rhinoceros, and the other one being a punk warthog. We get some interviews from the voice actors, and I really like this section of the movie. And it's a lot of the classic, we loved working with each other stuff. We had so much fun. And we even get an interview with the voice of Shredder himself, Uncle Phil, James Avery from The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. If you didn't know that, he is the voice of the Shredder. Mikey's, or Michelangelo's voice actor, talks about taking inspiration from Sean Penn in Fast Times at Ridgemont High. And Leo's voice actor mentions that he was basically the professor from Gilligan's Island, so that was his inspiration. Figured that would go a little bit more for Donatello, but as he explains it, the professor was always like the serious guy trying to get every other goofy character in order, so it makes sense. And you know what, I'll play this whole bit for you because it's pretty cool hearing all the voice actors do their stuff again.
Cowabunga, dudes!
I am Donatello.
I'm Shredder.
This is April O'Neil, Channel 6 News.
You should have seen some of the outtakes. These people are insane. This man is crazy.
The universe.
They're all crazy. Him, all of them together.
It was a pleasure being Splinter.
I've always been Donatello. Even before I turned green.
Wait till the world gets an eyeful of this.
With the success of the toys and cartoon, the Ninja Turtles were now a household name and took the world by storm. This is where I'm going to cheat I'm going to cheat big time for this review, because the next part of the documentary is all about the first live-action movie, which is territory that I'm going to be covering in the review of the movie when I get to it next episode, so therefore I'm going to skip this piece. After talk about the movie, we get talk on the impact the Turtles have had on pop culture and on people. We get many fans talking about being Turtle fans when they were kids, how it was something that changed their lives, and I attest to this, Ninja Turtles can change lives. I met my best friend Albert in first grade thanks to the Ninja Turtles. He was wearing a shirt with Shredder on it, and I had the Shredder toy. And of course, being little kids in first grade, this got us talking, and we became best friends from that moment on. We get video of Playmates telling Eastman and Laird that the lifetime of a toy is usually 3 years, so they'll be lucky to get that.
We would have a bunch of discussions with our agent, Mark Friedman, of longevity. I mean, he always said, like, look, kids, you know, it's going to be intro year, the banner year, and then the discount bin year. 3 years tops for any successful toy item that's in it, you're done and gone.
Usually if a toy line, especially action figures, they can last 3 years, that's fantastic. 3-year life cycle is really good for this industry. I mean, the percentages of a successful product are probably 1 in 10, so it's very low.
Of course, we all know that the Turtles went on to last for 5 years. Nah, I'm just joking. Look, they're still around, dude. We get more footage of fans talking about how Ninja Turtles have affected them. And the Turtles haven't just become popular in the United States, but all over the world. They show footage of the Turtles in Japan, Canada, France, everywhere. We get to see a bunch of cool toy designs from the Mirage artists, such as the Rat King or Mondo Gecko. And they point out how every figure... this is something that I kind of really didn't notice until they pointed it out. I believe apart from April O'Neil, every figure had like a different leg than the other, than itself, I mean. For example, like one leg would be like, I don't know, Muckman. One leg would be like slime, and then the other leg would be like a sewer lid or something. Or you'd have a giraffe, and one leg would be like a hoof, and the other leg would be the giraffe wearing like sneakers or something. So it's really weird, and I didn't really notice until they pointed it out. They show many of the turtle variants, like the basketball playing turtles or farmers or many of the silly ones. To me, this is all cool. I was a huge fan of the toys. I used to have a huge toy collection until my parents decided I was too old for toys and they gave them away. Thanks, Mom. We get quick talk about the video games. The arcade game being one of the most successful games ever. They don't really go much into the video game talk, though. They talk about how Archie Comics produced the line of comics that still runs to this day, I believe, which is based on the family-friendly cartoon. Now, I mentioned these in quick passing because, sadly, the movie does as well. They dedicate as much time to that as I probably did. They talk a lot about the creators and about the movie, and then they try to fit in everything else at the end. So that's probably my only gripe with this documentary. I mean, I grew up with the toys, I grew up with the cartoon, so I kind of wish they would go a lot more into that. They even get a quick mention of the Ninja Turtles music tour at Radio City Music Hall. And I promise I will get into detail about this in an episode I have planned on some of the Turtles' most embarrassing moments. We get a funny story about two actors who were portraying the Turtles like in costumes to promote the concert and an experience they had in Juarez, Mexico.
Me and Mike Black both did an appearance as the Turtles at a pizza restaurant somewhere in Juarez, Mexico.
They were doing a show in Texas, but we were going to go into Mexico in Juarez to promote it. And the idea was we were going to go to this ice cream store and greet kids at an ice cream store and wave. But when we showed up, there were thousands of kids there.
And there was no crowd control. There was no cops. It was just like this sea of people. And so we went up on the roof of this thing, and it was like Saigon. Like, we were up on the roof in these turtle outfits as just like a sea of Mexican children. We had pizza to throw down at them and T-shirts.
I'll never forget looking through this turtle mask at these thousands of kids just massed outside this store cheering and waving and, you know, we're dancing and... It was kind of a profound moment because it brought home sort of not only the phenomenon of the turtles, but there was also something sort of larger and sadder about the state of our world in seeing all these like poor kids who were just as caught up as their American counterparts in this thing, but had no access to it in the way that their American counterparts did. And it was kind of a bummer, but the ice cream was good.
Now we start talk of the sequel, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2, The Secret of the Ooze, which is another segment I'll skip due to me covering that movie in a later episode. There was a third movie made, which I'll get into it in the Embarrassing Moments movie, so that should tell you how good that one is. By the time the third movie was made, though, Mirage had grown into a company that was getting too big for Laird and Eastman. They really enjoyed doing the creative part of it. They enjoyed drawing the comics and that type of thing, and running the business was getting just too much for them, so they couldn't do what they actually loved. At that point, though, Eastman had actually moved out to the West Coast and was owner of Heavy Metal Magazine, and he was making a movie based on that at that time. Eastman and Laird agreed that they couldn't run a business together with him being away and distracted. So Eastman signed over creative rights to Peter Laird. Back in 2001, Peter Laird relaunched the Turtles comic back on the Mirage brand, And Laird enjoyed working on the comic, but it did not have that success it once enjoyed, with many people, including Laird himself, seeing that the whole Eastman's creativity left. Because as I mentioned earlier, they kind of complemented each other, so he knew that that was missing. And once again, Ninja Turtle, embarrassing moments, relaunched, I guess, the Turtles comic was launched with the Image comic brand, and if you know Image comics, you know how extreme they were. Oh man, those Turtle comics sure were a thing. In October 21, 2009, Peter Laird and Kevin Eastman sell the rights to the Ninja Turtles to Nickelodeon Studios for $60 million. We get closing lines from a lot of the people in the documentary about how the Turtles are still popular to this day. And we get the closing words from both creators.
If nothing else ever is said about this franchise, is that it changed so many people's lives. And it's all good at this point in life.
Certainly, when we got the job originally, none of us knew. I'm sure you've heard this from everybody else in the show. Nobody knew that it was going to be, that we'd be here talking about it a generation later.
There is something about that central concept of the Turtles that is timeless. Four outsiders brought together under a mentor, living in this world and trying to make their way. It's a fabulous sort of parable for adolescents.
Even the Avengers are big on the movie screen, but the Turtles also had a TV show that was on every day that kids watched. They had like three movies out. They had an album and a tour. Like, so if the Avengers also had songs about being Avengers, you know, and were going on tour on stage as the Avengers, like there's no comparison.
I do think that there's something just built in the core of these four green guys that, you know, is endearing forever.
How I was working in a lobster restaurant in Maine, met a waitress that I really liked. We fell in love. She was going to school in Amherst. I moved with her to Amherst. Happened to have a kind of a getting by job, like at a pizza place. Just happened to be on the bus on the right day at the right time to find this magazine that somebody left behind that made me pursue my career goal of wanting to write and draw comic books to this place in Northampton, which led me to Peter.
What if that person who had that Scat magazine hadn't dropped it on the floor of that bus that Kevin was taking from Amherst to Northampton? You know, it would never have happened.
There's too many happy accidents.
The movie ends with text over footage of a convention where after almost 20 years apart, Peter Laird and Kevin Eastman reunite to celebrate the Turtles' 30th anniversary of the first issue of the comic book. It's a very sweet way to end it. You could see the age on both these guys at this point, but they really do look like they enjoyed their reunion. And that's the last part. The end. Chain reaction, living underground. It's a wax show. It's a shell of a town. Turtles count it off. Live by the code of the martial arts. Never fight unless someone else starts. Always stick together no matter what. If all else fails, then it's time to kick butt. There's no one better.
Watch out for Shredder.
They're like no others. Those teenage brothers.
1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
All right, everybody. I hope you enjoyed that. It was I skipped the two parts of the movie. Those two parts are really big parts of this documentary. But as I said, I'm going to go over a lot of that stuff when I review those movies in their own episode. That's why I skipped it. As I mentioned, this movie, I picked it up. I really don't remember if it was Walmart or Best Buy or one of those. But it was very cheap. It was like a $5 movie. or probably less. You know, it was really cheap. I really do recommend if you find this, unless I drop the DVD. I recommend it. You know, I recommend if you're a Turtles fan. It's a pretty good movie. It does drag out a bit. I think they go too much into the guys meeting and all that. But, you know, it's nice to see all that. And, you know, if you're a fan of the Turtles, you'll love all this history. So, everybody, thank you for joining me. If you have any questions, send your emails to captain_marvelous1@yahoo.com. Join us on Facebook. Look for I'm Batman, the podcast. Yes, it's called I'm Batman, even though I'm talking about Turtles. This is a special episode. Also, be sure to rate us on iTunes if you enjoy the show. Just leave a rating. It does help show the more exposure to the show. So, once again, thank you, everybody. And remember, do you stand for what you believe in and find the strength to do what's right? Then you have turtle power. Shell shock pizza king. Can't stop these radical dudes. The secret of the ooze made the chosen few emerge from the shadows to make their move. The good guys win and the bad guys lose. Leonardo's a leader in blue. Does anything it takes to get his ninjas through. Donatello is a fellow, has a way with machines. Raphael's got the most attitude on the team. Michelangelo, he's one of a kind. And you notice where to find him when it's party time. That's a splinter title every